And now it's time for the Northern Storyteller. Today's storyteller is Tom Hassler, with stories from the book Igloo Tales by Edward L. Tyton.
The Magic Bird Skin. In the days of the old Eskimo Nation, they lived a village named Peanut Puck. In this village lived a man and woman who had but one son and no daughters. This son was already a young man. His parents wanted him to take a wife, but he would not think of it. He was too busy hunting to let women enter his mind. There was not another hunter in Peanut Puck who could kill as much game as this young fellow could. In summer he would hunt from his kayak for seal and ugluk, and in winter he would hunt caribou on the tundra. The most mysterious thing about his hunting was the fact that he would allow nobody to go with him, and no one ever came across him hunting. And yet each day he brought home lots of game. Now one summer day his hunting carried him to Cape Espenberg. There on the beach he met a young woman more beautiful than any in his village. She invited him to her home, so he went there with her. It must have been a case of love at first sight, for they were married a few days later. The young hunter made his home with his bride's parents, as was the custom, and continued hunting. He always had such good luck that his wife and her parents wondered how he hunted. They had never heard of anyone half so skillful. About a year later, a baby boy was born to the young couple, and every day in the igloo was rejoicing. Then the young mother took this opportunity to ask the secret of his mysterious hunting success. "You are the greatest hunter in the village," she said. "Please tell me your way of hunting." "All right, I'll show you," said her husband. "Tomorrow morning, ask your father to make a wooden dish. When it is finished, put it on the floor and fill it with salt water." The next morning she asked her father to make the dish, and when it was completed she filled it with clean salt water from the ocean. Then she called her husband. The young hunter took from his pocket a small dried up bird skin and placed it in the salt water. At once it began to swell and grow larger. When it was big enough, the hunter put it on. Then the skin began to shrink, and with it shrank the hunter, until he was no larger than a small bird. When he was the proper size, he spread his wings and flew away. Presently he flew back and dropped a fish on the floor. Then he flew away again, to return a few minutes later with a seal. "That is enough," cried his wife. "Now we know how you hunt." While still in the bird form, the young hunter decided to fly back from Peanut Puck to visit his parents. In a short time he was there. He alighted on his father's igloo and looked down through the ventilator. He could see his parents sitting on the floor eating their evening meal. So he went into the storm shed to take off his bird skin. For some reason it wouldn't come off, so he flew into the room anyway. His father, seeing the bird, tried to kill it with his knife. The bird flew around and around the room while the father hacked at it with his knife. Finally, the bird saw a hole in the wall and escaped into the storm shed. The bird skin had been cut so many times that it came off easily this time, and the son, resuming his normal size, walked back into the room. His parents were surprised to see him and glad, for they had long since given him up as lost. But when they learned that he was married and already had a baby boy, they were overjoyed. Then he told them about the magic bird skin and how narrowly he had escaped just a few moments before. When they heard this, the father made his promise that he would never use the bird skin again except for hunting. The hunter soon returned to his wife and child, and as long as he lived, was the greatest hunter on the coast. When he died, his magic bird skin was buried with him. Why old squirrel ducks are everywhere. One springtime, many years ago, two old squirrel ducks came flying into the Northland. They flew like arrows, and the wind whistled through their long tail feathers as they went. They flew into the North Pacific, and from there they entered the cold, barren sea country. Then the female duck said to her mate, "Let us stop here and make our nest." "No, not yet. Let's go a little farther," answered the male. And so on they went. When they had reached Bering Straits, the female duck spoke again. "Let us stop here and make our home," she begged. "Just a little farther, mate," urged the male. So on they flew, whistling through the air like arrows. They entered the Arctic Ocean and flew on until they reached Cape Espenberg, just where the Arctic Circle first touches Alaska on the west.
"We must stop here," cried the female duck, "for I am almost ready to lay my eggs."
This time her mate agreed. So down they swooped to earth, and in the grass close to the beach began to make a little nest. When it was finished, the female duck laid 5 pale green eggs in it. Several weeks later, the eggs all hatched out together, and the mother duck led her 5 little ducklings down to the sea. Then she swam out into the water, and the ducklings followed her. When they reached deep water, the mother duck suddenly dived into the sea and never came up again. The 5 little ducklings cried to their mother, for they were afraid. But it was no use. They never saw her again. Finally, the strongest of the 5 ducklings dived into the water in search of the lost mother. He swam until the water began to get very calm and shallow. At last, he rose to the surface and found himself in the center of a large, still lagoon. "This is just the place for me," he thought. So he searched no further, but remained thereafter in the lagoon. The 4 other ducklings waited and waited for him to come back. Then a second duckling dived into the water and began to swim with all his might. It happened that he got started in a southerly direction, and as he went, the water steadily became rougher and the current swifter. The sea began to narrow down, and at last, when the little duck came to the surface, he saw a point of land running out into the sea. He was at Cape Prince of Wales on Bering Strait. Being pleased and fascinated by the rough waves and swift water, he decided that this would be his home. 3 little ducklings were left at Cape Espenberg. They paddled around and around, crying and waiting for the return of their mother and brothers. At last, one little duck dived into the water and began to swim to the southwest. The water got rough and the current grew strong, but the brave little duck swam straight through the swift water and finally came to the surface in a quiet little bay near East Cape, Siberia. He didn't know it, but he was just across the strait from his brother. But there was plenty of food for ducks there, and so he made up his mind to stay. 2 very worried little ducks remained at Cape Espenberg. They could not imagine what had become of the rest of the family. They cried and cried, but in the end, one of them dived into the water and began to swim. The farther he swam, the colder the water became. Then it grew dark as night. The little duck was swimming under thick, solid ice. At last, he came to an open place, and there he was in the very center of the Arctic Ocean. This cold, lonely place seemed to appeal to him, so he made it his home, and has lived there ever since. One little duckling was left all alone at the cape. His mother and all his brothers had deserted him, so there was nothing for him to do but dive into the sea and hunt for them. So down he went and began to swim as fast as he could. On and on he went, looking here and there for his lost mother and brothers. At last, far ahead, he saw a dim light. He swam on until the light seemed to be directly overhead. So up he came to see what it was. It was only the sun. But instead of being low in the sky as it was at the cape, it was right above him. This little duck liked the warmth and brightness of the sun, so he decided to stay right there and make his home. And this is why, the Eskimos say, that we have old square ducks in every bay and lagoon, in rough water and in smooth, from the ends to the center of the Arctic Ocean, and, no doubt, every other place under the sun.
And now it's time for the Northern Storyteller. Today's storyteller is Ellen Hitcher, with stories from the book Igloo Tales by Edward L. Keitan. The Man Who Became a Caribou. There was once a hunter who had a wife and two small sons. With them lived his mother-in-law, who unhappily found fault with everything he did. At night even, when she thought he was asleep, he often hated berating him to his wife, telling her that he was a poor provider and not to be compared with other men in any way. Although his wife never found fault with him, nor heeded what her mother said about him, life became so miserable for the poor hunter that he decided to leave. He gave instructions that all his nets, snares, spears, bows and arrows, harpoons and boats should be preserved for his boys when they grew up, and that they should be instructed in their uses. His wife cried bitterly when he told her he was leaving, but his mind was made up. He kissed her and the two little boys goodbye and started on his way. Once alone on the tundra, he began to feel very bitter toward life. Of all things on earth, it was worse to be a human being, he thought. As he wandered aimlessly about, he espied a large flock of ptarmigan feeding carefree on the tundra. All about them were berries, green leaves, and seeds. The ptarmigan all looked fat and contented. "Oh, if only I were ptarmigan," said the man, "I would be happy." The longer he watched the ptarmigan, the more his desire grew. And when the flock rose like a snow-white cloud and swept away, he followed them. Somehow, he had a vague hope that there was a chance that they might take pity on him and cause him to become a ptarmigan. But each time that he caught up to the flock, they would spread their wings and sail away. All day long, he followed them hopefully. Just at sundown, the flock rose over a little hill and disappeared on the other side. When the hunter reached the spot where they had disappeared, he estimated the distance that they would probably fly. And just where the flock should have settled, he saw a little village. So he went to the village and walked straight to the pasty. Inside were many men and boys and a few women. As he entered, one man, who seemed to be the leader or chief man of the village, addressed him, saying, "Why is it, stranger, that you have followed us all day?" The hunter now saw that these were the ptarmigan in human form, so he answered, "It is because I should like to be one of you." Whereupon the leader said, "Our lives are not as pleasant as they may seem to you. Although we are always warm and have plenty of food, we are constantly in danger of our lives. We are preyed upon by birds of the air and by beasts, as well as by men. Surely you would not like to be one of us." The hunter had not thought of these things, which we recalled were true enough. So he gave up the idea of becoming one of them. The people were very kind to him and gave him food and drink. When it came bedtime, they gave him a white deerskin to lie upon and a brown one for a cover. As he was very weary from his long walk, the hunter fell to sleep instantly and knew nothing more till morning. When the first rays of the morning sun shone over the hills, the man awoke. The village and all of its inhabitants had disappeared. He looked for his brown deerskin, and in its place was a brown ptarmigan feather. Then he looked for the white deerskin, and under him was a white ptarmigan feather. His bed had been but two feathers, yet he had kept warm all night. Again the hunter began to walk aimlessly about, letting his feet carry him where they would. He had not gone far when he saw a pair of rabbits frisking among the willows. He watched them for a long while as they fed and played carefully on the grass. I believe I should be happy if I were a rabbit, thought the discontented man. I will follow them, and perhaps they'll pity me and cause me to become a rabbit like themselves. But as he approached them, they sped away like the wind. He followed them only to find that whenever he came near, they would bound away. Just at sunset, the two rabbits ran up a little hill and disappeared over the other side. When the hunter reached the spot where he had last seen them, he looked down into the valley before him, and there he saw a lone igloo. He went down to it, and inside he found two old people getting ready to spend the night. They gave him his supper, and when he had eaten, the old man asked, "Why have you followed us all day?" The hunter told his troubles and ended by saying he had noticed how happy and carefree they seemed, and that he wanted to be like them. "You would not be happy if you were a rabbit," said the old man sadly. "At times, you are most miserable. Large birds of the air hunt us to kill and eat us. Foxes and wolves lie in wait for us. Even the mink and weasel take our children. Surely you would not wish to be a rabbit." The hunter was convinced that the rabbit's lot was not so pleasant as he had supposed, so he troubled them no further. At bedtime, he was given a sleeping bag, and in a short time was fast asleep. The early morning sun was shining when he awoke. He felt warm, yet the igloo, the old people, and even his sleeping bag had disappeared. He was alone, lying on the bare earth. Once more, the hunter started on his conquest of a happy life. Presently, he saw a large herd of caribou grazing contentedly on the hillside. He went closer and noticed how fat and healthy they all were. In their very numbers, he saw security. There was no visible reason why he should not be contented if he were only a caribou. So he started towards the herd in hopes that they might let him join them and be a caribou. Yet, as before, upon his approach, the animals moved away to another spot, and he had nothing left to do but follow again. All day long, he followed the herd, till at evening the deer went over a hill and disappeared from view. The hunter climbed to the top of the hill and, looking down before him, saw a village of many igloos, and in the center stood a large cowskoo. He bent his steps toward the cowskoo, and upon entering found it to be full of men, one of whom they looked upon as a chief or leader. Food was brought for the hunter, and when he had eaten, the leader came to him and said, "Hunter, why have you followed us all day without either bow and arrow or spear?" "I did not wish to kill any of your people," answered the hunter. "I want to become a caribou and live with you." "But why should you wish to become a caribou when you are already a man?" asked the leader. Whereupon the hunter told his tale of woe, and when he had finished, the people felt so sorry for him that they decided he could become one of their number. The next morning, the hunter awoke at sunrise. The village had disappeared, and all about him were caribou picking away the snowy cover and eating the moss that they uncovered. He looked at himself, and sure enough, he was a caribou too. Now the hunter was happy for the first time in many years. He broke away the snow with his sharp hoofs and ate the tender white moss that lay beneath. He felt fine, but at the same time noticed he was losing weight steadily. Finally, when he had become so thin that he was worried, he went to the leader and asked for advice. "I eat all day long," said the hunter, "but I grow thinner every day." "That is because the change of food does not agree with you," said the leader. "Whenever you eat moss, think of something you liked when you were a man." The hunter tried this plan, and in a short time was large and strong again. Everything went well when the hunter went forward, except at times when the herd was suddenly frightened and ran wildly away. On these occasions, the hunter was left far behind. Try as he might, he could not keep up with the fleet-footed caribou. One day, when the herd was being pursued, the leader noticed the hunter far behind and went back to him. "Why is it you cannot keep up with the herd?" asked the leader. "It's because I lose time when I look at my feet and footing," answered the hunter. "Never mind your feet when you're running," returned the leader. "A caribou looks only at the horizon when he runs." The next time when they were chased by the wolves, the hunter held up his head and looked at the horizon. He found it easy thereafter to keep up with the fastest deer. Each night when the herd went into camp for the night, it was the habit of the leader to tell the hunter what would happen on the following day, so that he would know what to do and not be afraid. One evening the leader called him to his side and said, "I will tell you about the hunters. There are two kinds. One we call the black hunter, and the other we call the white hunter. The black hunter is our enemy, and from him we will always flee. He kills for pleasure, and does not take care of his meat, but leaves it to rot on the tundra. You will know him, for he looks black against the horizon, and when you cross his trail, his tracks prick your feet like needles. The other hunter is not really white. He's clear like water, and his tracks have no scent. He kills only for food, and takes good care not to waste his meat. We always try to help the white hunter." A few days later, a black object was seen on the horizon. The herd immediately took flight, and as they ran, the hunter felt something prick his feet. He knew that he had crossed the black hunter's trail. When the herd was far away and out of danger, the deer grazed as contentedly as before. The following day, a white hunter was seen approaching. The leader went among the deer, and selecting two fat young bucks, told them to graze at the edge of the herd, which they did without question. Then the remainder of the herd wandered a short distance away and left the two bucks to the white hunter. This occurrence worried the hunter very much. But that night in the cowshed, the leader comforted him, saying, "Oh, our boys will soon be home, so do not worry." He hardly had finished when the sounds of laughter and talking came to their ears, and shortly in walked two young men. "Did the white hunter skin you properly and take good care of the meat?" asked the leader. "Yes," returned the young man. "His knife was sharp and everything was done properly." "It is well," smiled the leader, and the young men went to their evening meal. As the happy years went by, and the hunter was now an old caribou, he began to think about his former life as a man. He wondered if his mother-in-law was dead, and if his wife had remarried, and if his boys had grown to be strong men. As he thought of these things, a desire came to him to return to his old home by the sea. So he went to the leader for advice. The leader sympathized with the hunter and gave him instructions to follow, but warned him it would be hard to become a man after being a caribou for so many years. So the hunter bid his caribou friends goodbye and started off towards his old home. As he got near the homes of men, he passed by many snares and pitfalls set for caribou, but he knew them and went by unharmed. But as he approached his former home, he began to think about his wife and boys, forgetting all about the dangers about him. All at once, he felt himself caught in a snare and could go no farther. He knew that to struggle would only make matters worse, so he lay down and waited quietly. Soon two young men came up, and when they saw a caribou in their snare, they shouted joyfully. But when they approached to kill the deer, it spoke to them in the voice of a man, and they became so frightened that they could not move. "Please take me out and skin my head," asked the caribou. For a long time the ghost did not move, but finally, when the request had been repeated many times, one of the boys began to skin the head. When they saw that there was a man inside the skin, they completed the task, and the old hunter went home with the young men. Great was his surprise and joy when his wife recognized him as her long-absent husband. He had never been remarried, expecting every day that he would return. The old mother-in-law was long since dead, and the two young men who had snared him were his own sons, grown to manhood. The old hunter was at last happy to be a man, but it is said that he didn't live many years, as his chest was much deformed from walking like a caribou. And now it's time for the Northern Storyteller. Today's storyteller is Jean Tamara Stevens, the story from the book Igloo Tales by Edward L. Kyton. A Story of Kyot. There was once a young Eskimo named Kyot. This fellow seemed to have a passion for hunting. He considered it a disgrace to return home without game of some kind, and if he had exceptionally good luck, he would go hunting again the same day. He never rested, and he never visited or danced. Hunting was all that he cared to do. It was all very well for Kyot to be honored as the greatest hunter of their tribe, but it was hardship on his young wife. Every deer that he brought home, he had to skin and prepare for winter use. To keep up to him, he had to work night and day without rest. Eventually, she became so weary that she went to her husband and said, "See, Kyot, I can no longer wash the bloodstains from my hands. We have meat in our task to last all winter and far into the summer. Please hunt no longer, but remain here and rest." Kyot reluctantly consented to cease hunting, but it was hard for him to do. Inaction made him restless, and shortly he began to worry. At last he decided to leave his wife and home and go somewhere far away so he could hunt to his heart's content. The following morning, Kyot put his hunting clothes, harpoons, and knives into his kayak and started across the ocean. Day after day, he paddled on in the same direction. Each day became a little shorter than the preceding day. Finally, it was so dark in the middle of the day that Kyot could not see the bow of his kayak. While he was trying to decide what to do, he saw a space high above him where it was daylight in spite of the darkness all around. So Kyot tied a long rope to his harpoon and hurled it up into the light. The harpoon stuck fast, and although Kyot tugged at it, he couldn't pull it down. This was what he wanted. Then he tied his kayak to the other end of the rope and began to climb upward toward the light. Up and up he went, and when he reached his harpoon, he was in a new land, high up on a steep cliff where it was light and sunny. He looked down to his kayak, but it was so dark below that he could not see it. The cliff was so high that it was shutting out the light of the sun. So he pulled up the kayak by means of the rope, and when he had it on the cliff, put heavy logs on it so that the wind could not blow it away. Being very hungry, Pollock sat down and ate some blubber. Then he put a small knife and other things that he would need in the sealskin bag and made ready for a long trip. His big knife was too heavy to carry, so he wrapped it up and put it back in the kayak. When all was ready, Pollock started off across the tundra in search of people. As he walked on and on, he saw many tracks of wild animals, but never any of men. Once he thought he saw a village ahead of him, but when he reached the place, he found that it was only a grove of large willows. He went on, and presently he saw some tracks of a man. They were very close together, so Pollock knew that the man was old and feeble. So he followed the footprints until he came to many others, all leading in different directions. Pollock was puzzled as to which way to go. Finally, he decided to walk backwards, and when he got back to where the willows had been, he was surprised to find a large village in their place. It was still daylight, so Pollock decided not to enter until dark, as the village might be inhabited by bad people who would kill him because he was a stranger. So he sat down and waited for darkness to come. When night had fallen, Pollock walked into the village and looked for the largest tent. When he found it, he went to the igloo nearest it, believing the owner of the tent must live there. In the igloo, Pollock found a man and two women. They were very surprised to see him, and the man exclaimed, "Oh, why did you come here? People never come to this village." "I came because my wife made me quit work," replied Pollock. "That is the only reason that I left home." "All right, take off your mucklucks and have some meat," said the man. Then turning to one of the women, he added, "You work with mucklucks and bring the meat." After the woman had worked the mucklucks until they were soft and pliable, she went out and presently came back with several varieties of meat. Pollock put on his mucklucks and then sat down to eat with the people. When the meal was finished, the man said, "Let us go to the pasty, strangers." So the two men went to the pasty or council room, and when they entered the door, Pollock heard the sounds of animals in the world. He heard wolves and wolverines, foxes, brown bears and polar bears, but he saw nothing. The two men spent the evening visiting with each other, and when it was late, walked home and went to bed. The next day, the man suggested that Pollock should marry the young woman who had worked his mucklucks. Both were willing, and so they were married. As a wedding present, Pollock gave his wife the small knife that he had brought with him. Nothing could have pleased him more, for she had never owned a knife before. But the old man looked sad when she received the knife. Pollock noticed it, but could not understand what was the matter. The morning following their marriage, Pollock asked his wife, "Why is it that the old man seemed sorry that I gave you the knife?" "It is because he has no knife," she replied. "None of these people have knives." "I have another knife in my kayak," said Pollock. "But I have forgotten where I left it." Then Pollock went to the old man and told him he could have the big knife when they found the kayak. This pleased the old fellow greatly, and he led Pollock to the pasty. When they entered, Pollock heard the animals growling as before, but saw nothing. Then the old man spoke to the voices of the wolves, saying, "Two men, go get the stranger's kayak. You know where it is." Two young men came out of the door and went out through the door. In only a few minutes, they returned, saying, "We have brought the stranger's kayak. It is hanging outside on the path." Pollock was astonished when he heard that they had already returned with his kayak. "What?" he said, "that my kayak was far, far from here." The old man asked that the knife be brought to him, and when he saw it, he was happy and thanked Pollock many times. The following morning, Pollock woke up feeling very unhappy. When asked what was the matter, he said, "I want to go hunting." when I was home, I always hunted and never rested. Very well, said the old man, you shall go hunting. Put on your sealskin trousers and water mucklets. Then put your harpoon in the kayak and bring it into the kayak. Kayak thought that the old man meant for him to take the kayak into the kayak that he might work on it and put it in shape for the hunt. So he brought it in. But when he sat inside, he heard a loud creaking and rumbling sound, and the floor of the kayak split asunder. There, where the floor had been, was the sea. So Kayak launched his kayak and began hunting. When he was only a short distance from shore, he killed an ugric with his harpoon. The people were watching him. Then he towed the ugric ashore and began to cut it into small pieces. Women came, and each took a piece of the meat home. When only the head was left, Kayak carried it home, and his wife cooked it for supper. The next day, Kayak wanted to go hunting again. So the old man took him to the kayak, and as before, the floor split open, and in its place came the sea. Kayak ran out in his kayak, and soon killed a seal. Then he killed another, and another, and when he had all he was able to pull ashore, he paddled back to where the people were waiting. Looking back, he saw that the sea had disappeared, and he was in the kayak. Then he cut up the seals, and the women came and took the meat home. When only one seal was left, Kayak carried it to his wife, who cooked it for the evening meal. When Kayak woke the following morning, he was feeling very miserable again. His wife wondered what was the trouble, and when she asked, Kayak said, I am very lonesome for my old home and wife. I would like to go home, but I have forgotten the way. When he left the room, the old man asked what was the matter with the young hunter. He wishes to return to his first wife, replied the young woman, but he does not know the way. Very well, replied the old man. Tomorrow, we will take him to the party. The old man then went to Kayak and told him that he could assist him in finding his home if he would follow his instructions. When you get into your kayak, said the old man, first paddle 2 strokes on the left, 2 strokes on the right, and then 1 stroke backwards. Then you will be on your beach at your old home. But before you get out of the kayak, be sure that you eat the 4 pieces of tallow that I will give you. If you do so, you will have no trouble. The next morning, Kayak took his kayak to the kayak beach where all the people had assembled. The floor creaked and then opened up, and there was the sea. Kayak got into the kayak, and the old man placed the cake containing 4 pieces of tallow in his lap. Now listen to what I say, said the old man. We are not people. We are animals. We helped you because you gave us knives. Goodbye, so you will never see us again. Now, close your eyes and paddle as I told you. Kayak bid everybody goodbye, then closed his eyes. First he paddled 2 strokes to the left, 2 to the right, and 1 backwards. Then he opened his eyes, and sure enough, he was right in front of his old home. Kayak looked towards the igloo, and there he saw his wife cutting up an igloo. All at once, a fit of jealousy seized him, and he jumped out of the kayak and ran to his wife, shouting, who killed that ugric? But alas, he had forgotten to eat his tallow. His wife did not recognize him, and neither did she hear him speak. He shouted again and again, but got no response. Finally, in anger, he struck his wife with a paddle, and she fell to the ground, fainting. Some people came out of the igloo, and seeing that the stranger had struck the woman, drove him away, not recognizing him. Kayak didn't know what to do now. At last, he went to an old woman whom he had befriended many times. When he told her his story, she remembered him and was sorry. I will try to help you, because many times you have helped me, she said. That night, the old woman gave Kayak a strange kind of meat to eat. While he was eating it, he thought the igloo and the old woman were steadily getting larger. But it was not bad at all. The fact was that Pollock steadily was getting smaller. Things seemed bigger, and he became smaller until he fell into a deep sleep and remembered nothing more that happened to him that evening. Pollock's first wife had always wanted a child, but had none. That is why she readily accepted the tiny baby that the old woman brought to her the following morning. But it was a very strange baby indeed. It wouldn't drink milk, and would only eat meat from the hands of the old woman. Then it began to grow. It grew so rapidly that in 3 days it was a strong young man, and on the fourth day it had whiskers. The second husband returned from hunting that day, and seeing the young man, recognized Pollock, his rival, and fled for his life, never to return. As for the young woman, she had always hoped that Pollock would return, so they remarried and lived happily thereafter. And now it's time for the Northern Storyteller. Today's storyteller is Tom Hassler, with stories from the book Igloo Tales by Edward L. Kuyten.
The Boy Who Ate Too Much. A small boy once lived in an igloo with an old woman. This boy was always hungry and always begging for food. But one day the last of the food was eaten, so the old woman sent him down to the beach to search for food. The first thing he found was a little palm cod. He picked it up and, after pulling off its head, swallowed it in one gulp. Continuing his search, he presently came upon a seal. As before, he pulled off its head and ate the whole seal. On he went, still hungry, until he came upon a large bearded seal, or ugruk, sunning itself on the sand. Before it could scramble back into the water, he had caught it, pulled off its head, and eaten it. Not satisfied yet, he continued down the beach until he caught sight of a white whale stranded high and dry on the sand. In the same manner as he had done with the palm cod, the seal, and the ugruk, he pulled off its head and ate the whale, skin, bones, blubber, and all. After the boy had finished the whale, he felt better, and presently began to sing. He rubbed his belly and sang to his stomach. For the first time in his life, he had had enough to eat. But soon he became very, very thirsty. So he went to a nearby pond and began to drink. He drank and drank and drank until the pond was quite dry. Then he started off for the igloo in which he lived with the old woman. Reaching the igloo, he tried to get in at the door, but could not get through. He had eaten too much. "How am I to get in?" he called to the old woman. "Come in through the window," he answered. The window was much smaller than the door, but he tried it anyway, and found he could get just his head through. "I can't get through the window," he called to the old woman. "Come in through the ventilator," cried the old woman in answer. This seemed ridiculous to the boy, since the ventilator was very much smaller than the window, but he tried it anyway. This time he got his head and shoulders through, but could go no further. Again he called to the old woman for advice. "Come in through the eye of my needle," she shouted, holding up the needle. And through it the boy came tumbling onto the floor. When the old woman saw how swelled he was from eating so much, she shouted,
"Look out! Keep away from the seal oil lamp!"
But in spite of himself, the boy stumbled towards that lamp. At the same instant, the lamp sprang towards him. The old woman barely had time to rush out through the door. Boom! There was a sound like a mighty clap of thunder. When all was still again, the old woman crawled up to the window and peeked in. The boy had disappeared. The lamp was gone too. But down in the room where they had been was a deep, dark pool. And in it were swimming a tomcod, a seal, an ugruk, and a big white whale. The Hunter and the Raven. There was once a hunter who was a very poor shot. In fact, he could not even see where his arrows went when he shot them from his bow. Day after day he would hunt for caribou, but never did he bring one home. The other hunters teased him about it so much that the poor hunter became ashamed of himself and very unhappy. At length, life became unbearable to him, so he decided to freeze himself to death. So one day, when it was very cold, he went far out upon the snow-covered tundra. There he took off his parka, his fur trousers, his warm mukluks and mittens, and lay down in the snow to die. Strange to say, he did not freeze as he had hoped, but instead, the heat of his body melted the snow away from him. As he lay there with his eyes closed, trying to freeze, Mr. and Mrs. Raven came by, and noticing that he had no clothes on, and that his eyes were closed, thought that he was dead. "Will you take his eyes out first?" asked Mrs. Raven to her husband.
"I'm afraid to," returned Mr. Raven. "I don't believe he is dead."
"Oh, yes, he is," returned Mrs. Raven. "He has been dead a long time. You see, the foxes have carried away his clothes."
"Yes, you are right," said Mr. Raven. "I will take out his eyes." So, drawing out his knife, he jumped upon the man's chest to cut out his eyes. The hunter had heard the conversation, and just as the raven jumped on his chest, he scrambled to his feet and sent poor Mr. Raven tumbling to the ground. The hunter caught the raven's knife as he dropped it and tried to catch the raven, but it kept backing away.
"Give me my knife, Mr. Hunter," begged the raven,
but the hunter would not.
"Please give me back my knife, and I will pay you anything you want. When you go hunting, you shall always have good luck."
"Are you speaking the truth?" asked the hunter.
"Yes," answered the raven. "You shall be a great hunter."
"Nothing better could I ask," replied the hunter. "You may have your knife."
"Always remember this one thing,"
said Mr. Raven, as he received his precious knife. "Whenever you kill a caribou, always take out his eyes first." Thereupon, he thanked the hunter for the knife and flew away. The man put on his fur clothes, and taking his bow and arrow, started to hunt again. Soon he saw a herd of caribou and easily killed two of them. Following the raven's advice, he took out the eyes first, and then began to skin the animals. Presently, Mr. and Mrs. Raven came flying down, and after eating the eyes, flew away again. Just as the raven had promised, the man became a great hunter, and for a long time always found game when he went hunting. People no longer teased him, but honored him for his great skill. But after a time, he became very proud of his success, and completely forgot the raven's warning. One day, he killed a caribou, and not troubling to remove the eyes, skinned it out and carried the meat home. The following day he saw no caribou. The next day he was just as unlucky. The third day he saw a caribou, but when he shot at it, he could not see where his arrows fell. Then the hunter, remembering his previous experience, slyly decided to prove himself. So going out upon the tundra, he took off his warm parka, his fur trousers, his mukluks and mittens, and lay down in the snow. Before long, the hunter was frozen stiff.